Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor. Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.
May I have your attention, please? Now, taking the airwaves on 97.3 The Fan, San Diego's own, Gwen and Chris.
Featuring Tony Gwynn Jr.
Whatever you say, erect, I'll say erect. You are just
losing your mind over the JD comment.
Yeah.
Because that was way worse than that.
And Chris Ello.
Tony Mulan in 1883. Old Hose Radborn, 1883.
Wait, that was his name?
No.
Old Hose?
No.
Old Hoss Radborn.
Gwen and Chris starts now on 97.3 The Fan.
404, Tony Gwynn Jr., Chris Ello, smack dab in the middle of Chris versus The Fan, and Tom was on question number three here.
He has had to wait through an entire commercial break.
All right, Tom, here we go.
How you holding out, Tom?
I've been studying. I think I'm good.
Good thinking.
This is for the Dodger-Padre tickets?
Yes, it is.
All right, here we go. Question number three for the win. There's some good ones on here. Who holds the major league record with a whopping 59 consecutive scoreless innings pitched?
I think I might know this one. It's Oral Hershiser.
I think you got it.
That is correct.
Winner, Tom.
Tom, nice work. Hold on.
Well done.
We're going to send you to Scraby.
The patience paid off.
It did. Way to study it up, too.
Not only does he get the tickets, but he gets to talk to Scravy about it. So that's pretty good. That's a double winner right there.
That'll be fun.
Should be a highlight for him.
I want to tell you guys, coming up in the next 30 minutes, listen for your name to be called and call back at 833-288-0973 to win a pair of tickets to see the Padres host the Red Sox on Sunday, August 25th. That's not it, though. Plus, there'll be some football tickets. Yep, football tickets to the Rose Bowl when Oklahoma takes on UCLA Bruins. You'll also be entered into our grand prize, a drawing for a two-night stay at the Flamingo Hotel on the Vegas Strip and tickets to see Paula Abdul's new show. Make sure you sign up at 973thefan.com/biggestfan to enter. All right, it's time for Odd Thomas. You know, this is becoming a favorite of mine. I kind of like the music that comes in, and then
I like that.
Odd Thomas brings some odd facts to the table too.
That's what he's supposed to do.
Exactly. Let's get into some Odd Thomas.
Meet our producer Thomas.
Hi. Hello. Hi.
Thomas loves baseball. Thomas loves baseball stats.
I love this guy over here.
And Thomas is odd.
I thought he was a bit weird when he arrived.
That means it's time for Odd Baseball Stats with Odd Thomas.
We'll see about that, Pop Spice.
And let's get started, I guess, on 97.3 The Fan.
Before Odd Thomas gets started, I wanted to wrap up the Ricky Henderson conversation. The year he had 130 stolen bases. He was caught 42 times that year. But Ricky Henderson's all-time stolen base percentage was 81% successful.
That's like...
The current major league rate is 71%. So he was 10% above what most guys do. And he had the most.
How many did he have? 130?
130 in the season and 1,406 in his career.
What, he got thrown out how many times?
42. 42. That's more than anybody has in terms of stolen bases this year. Wow. Things have changed.
Just a little bit.
Just a bit. All right, Odd Thomas, what do you have for us today, buddy?
76%, by the way.
Yep.
I was gonna open with the how many times he was caught, but you beat me to it.
I beat you to it. Sorry about that.
All good.
Leave it to Odd Chris to outdo Odd Thomas.
Or Uncle Chris, right?
Yes, him too.
All right, so Mike Trout has been on a tear as of late and is probably
Isn't he always on a tear?
I know, right? For all 8 years.
He's the greatest player in the history of the game.
Well, again, he's having another almost lock for an MVP season. But with his stolen base last night, gave him 10 on the season, making it the eighth time in his career he's had 25-plus home runs and 10-plus steals, making him the first AL player and fourth in MLB history to do so. Eight plus seasons of 25-plus and 10-plus. Joining Barry Bonds, who's done it 12 times from 1990 to 2001. Daryl Strawberry, done it 9 times from 83 to 91. And Willie Mays did it 8 times from 1955 to 1962.
Willie Mays, by the way, I always liked Willie's comment. Because you remember, I believe the 40-40 plateau's only been reached 3 times in baseball history. 40 home runs, 40 stolen bases. Do you remember who the first to do it was? Just by chance?
Wasn't it Barry?
No, Jose Canseco was.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
And as if Jose needed to think he was any better than he actually was. But Jose Canseco did it and was, you know, celebrated and applauded. And everybody thought, oh, Jose Canseco, that's incredible. Nobody's ever done this. And they asked Willie Mays about it because Willie Mays was a great, you know, power hitter and base runner. And Willie Mays said, somebody would have told me when I played that 40-40 was a big deal. I just would have done it every year.
He
would have. Right. I mean, Willie Mays didn't, like, no one cared back when he played, so he didn't worry about those numbers.
We weren't as locked in on these arbitrary.
Exactly. That's kind of what I think about the 25-10. Nice.
What's 25-10?
25 home runs, 10 steals for Mike Trout, and he's done it, what,
eight
times. That's what Odd Thomas's fact was.
That's certainly an arbitrary number.
It's arbitrary. Yes, it is.
All right. Yesterday during the Big Five, Scraby mentioned about how Gary Sanchez and the Yankees have hit so many home runs, blah, blah, blah.
I love how because it was the Yankees, blah, blah, blah. If it was Red Sox, he would have read that whole
thing. All right, Gary Sanchez hit his 10th home run versus the Orioles, joining his teammate Gleyber Torres, who had 13. They were the only pair of teammates to homer 10-plus times against the team in a season. They're the second pair of teammates, I'm sorry, joining Lou Gehrig and Babe Ruth to do it versus the 1927 Red Sox, who had 11 home runs each.
Well, that 27 Red Sox team must have really been crappy, Odd Thomas. Give up all those home runs. To who? A couple of piddling guys like Lou Gehrig and Babe Ruth?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously, they were trash.
That's pretty good company, though, for Gary Sanchez and Gleyber Torres to get into the same sentence as Lou Gehrig and Babe Ruth. Not bad.
Yeah, this happens when you play in the Orioles
19 times and you win 17.
All right, so we all know the Marlins have been pretty bad as of late, even though they've got 2 World Series in their franchise's history. But over the last decade, it hasn't been so pretty for them. But since 2012, the Marlins have won a total of 542 games. Meanwhile, the Dodgers, since 2014, have won 552.
Dodgers have won 10 more games than the Marlins. And
with 2 extra years of play.
2 extra years of work. Well, the Marlins may close that gap today. They're leading the Dodgers in the 9th inning.
That's interesting. But there was some downtime there for the Dodgers for some time. I know it doesn't feel like I was there when it was a downtime. They weren't winning very many. We were like a 500 team.
Huh.
Early 90s. They weren't very good.
25 years ago. Well, they've been good for a while.
Well, clearly not. The numbers don't lie. If the Marlins have more wins than they do, or 2 less wins in 2 less years, right?
10 less.
10 less wins in 2 less years. So clearly, unless we're going to say on the same wavelength that the Marlins are been dominating, unless we're going with that.
No, we're not. Okay.
All right, on Tuesday, Chris Sale became the fastest pitcher to reach 2,000 strikeouts, which is a cool feat, but like Chris said the other day, talk to him when it's 4,000 or 5,000 like Nolan Ryan. But there is one category where he beat Nolan Ryan. It's the Chris Sale, at the time he hit his 2,000 strikeout, only had 372 walks allowed, and compared to Randy Johnson at 857. And Nolan Ryan, when he got his 2,000 strikeout, had 1,132 walks.
Yeah. That's why Nolan Ryan threw like 190 pitches per outing, because he would strike out 14 and walk 12.
He was trying to punch you.
Yes, that's all. He would walk the bases loaded, then strike out 3 in a row and walk off the mound.
I actually watched a classic game when he was with the Rangers where he walked 3 and then punched out the next 3.
Yeah, Nolan Ryan, man.
That's all I got today, guys.
Special. What?
All right. Well,
you're fired. You gotta have more than that.
No, it seems like he's done. Odd Thomas, you peeked out.
No, that's good. Odd Thomas, I'm just giving you a hard time.
I got a couple, but I know we're in the interest of time. We have a guest coming up. We need to get to.
Oh, indeed, we.
Ah,
do.
Fair enough.
All right, it's that time of the year, ladies and gentlemen, and you know what that time is. Fantasy football is right around the corner. We'll talk to our fantasy football expert, Bleacher Report's Matt Camp is next.
Sorry, I was busy trying to decide which kicker I'm going to draft with the first overall pick in my fantasy football draft. How are you? Welcome back, Gwen and Chris. 419 is the time.
Championship?
Oh, not for me if I get a kicker in the first round.
Yes.
With the first pick. I think it's just number one overall. It's kind of surprised everybody. It is time to talk some fantasy football right now on Gwen and Chris. One of our all-time favorites, and we've missed him throughout the off season, but great to have him back from Bleacher Report. Mr. Matt Camp joins us here on the SDCCU Fan Hotline. Matt, how you been?
I was ready to hang up on you when I heard all that kicker talk, but yeah. I'm doing all right.
You know, I mean, first pick, kicker, I mean, you'd have to just, like, kick the guy right out of the league who did that.
I mean, I'd be very happy to play against that person. I mean,
right.
Here's how I handle kickers. On the segments I do for Bleacher Report, my dogs pick kickers every week. We do pugs pick kickers. Now my young daughter's going to be involved. So we're going to get three kicker picks from a six-month-old in a couple of months and two pugs. That's how I treat kickers, and that's how everybody should treat kickers. If you don't have to draft them and you can pick one up the day before week one starts, go ahead and do that.
Oh, don't even draft one. I never even thought
of
that.
So if you can get away with not drafting it, and that's up to your league rules, it's not even worth it. You might as well take a flyer on somebody in the last round, hang on to that guy, and then if you have to, you know, pick up a kicker the night before the season begins, then go ahead and do so. Avoid picking up a kicker as long as you can. You can go find one.
Matt Camp with all of the great fantasy football details. Although I will say this, the guy in our draft last year who had the first overall pick picked a player that turned out to be worse than a kicker.
Because he never played.
Right. He picked Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah.
So you never know. And the guy ended up, I think, in second place in our league, if I'm not mistaken.
He did.
Who did that. Anyway, Matt, enough of that stuff. Let's get to the real stuff. Fantasy football 2019. Give me your top two or three running backs, wide receivers, guys. Because I think that's what everybody kind of want. It's funny, we all think about who we're going to take with our first pick, but what really matters is who we get later in the draft.
That's all that matters is how you fill that roster out.
But if you do have an early pick, who should you be thinking about?
I mean, if you're in the top four, there's been basically the same four guys going in some order. I usually see Barkley go number one, regardless of the scoring format, and then it's McCaffrey and Kamara. Zeke is still in there because there is confidence from people that he is going to sign before week one. I am in that camp. I believe he will sign before week one because I think Dallas needs him. On the flip side of that, I don't have Melvin Gordon in the normal sixth spot that many people had him in and don't have him there anymore because I think there's more concern that he won't be out there come week one or week two for that matter. So I have him down at 12. Now, if he signs, he'll be right there behind David Johnson, number six. But you got some kind of combination of Barkley, McCaffrey, Elliott, and Kamara at running back. After those guys, you can go David Johnson at five, but you might find your way into these wide receivers, DeAndre Hopkins, Davante Adams. I'll tell you this, and this is how good I feel about the wide receiver group. Hopkins, Adams, Julio, Michael Thomas, Beckham, Tyreek Hill, Juju. I feel good enough about those guys to say I wouldn't be surprised if any of those seven players finished as the number one overall wide receiver this year. Not only are they great wide receiver ones in terms of the tier, any one of those guys. I love the situation and talent so much that it wouldn't shock me if they finished number one overall. So really, I have Hopkins and Adams as my top two guys. I've taken Michael Thomas in the first round. I've taken Julio in the first round. I've taken Beckham in the first round easily. You know, you can fill up your first round that way. If you go back to running back, you know, maybe it's James Conner, Joe Mixon, the aforementioned Le'Veon Bell, who used to be in that number one conversation and isn't this year because he's on a new team. It's not the Steelers. I think the Jets will be okay. You know, there's a question of what's Bell going to be. I think a year off for the most part for running back isn't the worst thing in the world, but getting in game shape and not necessarily game shape, but being out there in a game situation is a different story. So is there potential rust there? You know, he could still go in the first round, but he's not going as a top five pick. But it's running backs and receivers. Don't you dare think about taking Patrick Mahomes in the first three rounds.
First three rounds.
Good to know.
I wouldn't go. I'll tell you what. I'm a waiting on a quarterback guy. And by the way, if you waited on a quarterback last year, you took Patrick Mahomes probably in the 12th round. That's how that turned out.
No, nobody even picked him in our draft. Yeah. So there you go.
Come on now.
Yeah. No, we didn't. We're not very smart.
Yeah.
I think you learned that by talking to us all the last year.
Some of us didn't do our homework, including myself there, man. Let's talk about the rookie class this year. There's some intriguing names in this rookie class. Anybody that you feel confident taking, not necessarily in the early rounds, but that you feel will be a contributor on a fantasy team this year?
I think the running back group is what you're looking at there, and Josh Jacobs jumps out. Yeah. There's the most open opportunity for Josh Jacobs in Oakland, and you know they had brought in Isaiah Crowell from the Jets, and he went down for the season, so they re-signed Doug Martin. But you just look and say opportunities there. He was clearly the top back in this rookie class. I think he could be a top 20 back this season just on opportunity alone. Nobody's really pushing him there for touches. I think he'll get some catches there. So I don't love Oakland. I don't think they're terrible. I kind of throw them in the same conversation as the Jets, maybe a little bit better, but I think he'll be fine. I think he'll be a solid RB2. The two names I think everybody's most intrigued by, and I think the guy who's got the most buzz right now, is David Montgomery in Chicago. And I do like his talent. There's no doubt about that. But the one thing that I worry about, that I don't worry about with Josh Jacobs, is the opportunity. You have Tariq Cohen there. He's an explosive player. He's not a 10-carry-a-game guy, but he could be a 12 to 15 touch-a-game guy. Chicago also spread the ball around with Allen Robinson and Trey Burton and Taylor Gabriel. And Matt Nagy had no problem as a great offensive mind spreading the ball around. So I just worry a little bit about Montgomery not getting enough volume. I think, you take him. He's pushing his way right now into my top 25. Just outside it, though, right now. I'm just worried about volume. The talent's there. The guy I don't worry as much about when it comes to opportunity is the other rookie running back we haven't mentioned yet, and that's Miles Sanders. He was my number two running back in this class. I love his situation in Philadelphia. I think the Eagles have the potential to be an explosive offense once again. Sure, it, of course, depends on the health of Carson Wentz, but everybody's coming into the season healthy. Wentz, Alshon Jeffrey, was Zach Ertz set the record last year for most receptions. They have a great second tight end in Dallas Goedert. They bring DeSean Jackson back. And I think Miles Sanders comes to this backfield as the guy. There's hype on him. The hype has continued. He had a nice run already tonight. I love to see hype just snowball into more. I don't want to say it was one game or just training camp. Just keep it up. I know they have Jordan Howard there from Chicago, but they gave up next to nothing to get him. I think he's just insurance. I think they want Sanders to be the guy. And I know Doug Peterson has driven us nuts the last couple of years with the carousel, the running back by committee. But I think that stops at Miles Sanders. I call certain players league winners, guys that are going to outperform their draft value. I think Miles Sanders is one of those guys this year.
I hope I pick ahead of Tony so I can get him. We're joined by Matt Camp, Bleacher Report, talking fantasy football here, 2019. Just as a personal question for our league, but I think to a lot of people who are listening as well, Matt, how do you – because this year we put Tony in charge of things, and he is desperate to play the PPR format. He was not happy last year that we did not do the PPR, which is point per reception, for those who don't know. Anyway, when it comes to drafting, what changes do you make in your draft strategy for a PPR league that you may not have for a non-PPR league?
Okay, good question. By the way, if we like fantasy football and we like fun, we want points, I assume. That's where the PPR comes in. If
Thank
you want to play
you.
Half point, if you want to play half point and you know, be the compromise there, I think that's fine. But there should be points some way rewarded for catches. What I would tell you is this, you're going to look at guys who rely on the catches to carry their value, and that's typically at the running back position. So, and Alvin Kamara is going to rely on that a little bit more than, let's say, Saquon Barkley or Christian McCaffrey. Those guys are going to catch balls, but Kamara's not going to have as many carries. So there's a difference there. I'll give you a perfect example. James White, running back for the Patriots last year, led the team in targets, was right up there in receptions. They have not added much in the receiving core this year, and Rob Gronkowski is gone. So in PPR formats, I think he could be a top 15, easily a top 20 running back. But in non-PPR formats, he's a flex play at best. He's in that RB3 category. So you got to think about a spot like that. The aforementioned, we just talked about Tariq Cohen. Love him from a touch standpoint, but I have him for less than 100 carries this year. So he's going to get hurt by that. So it's more about the guys that rely on the receptions. You know, I think a guy like Tyreek Hill is going to get a boost in non-PPR formats because I don't think he's going to catch as many passes as Michael Thomas, Juju Smith-Schuster. He's going to do a lot with what he does. He might average more yards per catch than anybody else in that group, so he might get a boost in that format. You know, the guys that make the big plays that don't necessarily catch a lot of passes. Brandon Cooks for the Rams is another one of those guys. Kenny Galladay for the Lions is another one of those guys. Tyler Lockett, a lot of people are high on him as the new number one guy in Seattle with Doug Baldwin. I think his target number goes up, but I don't think he catches a ton of passes. Mike Williams to the Chargers last year didn't have a ton of targets. Chargers don't throw the ball a lot. Maybe they do with the Gordon situation, but he scored 10 touchdowns last season. So you got to judge that. Where are the points coming from? I have scoring set up. That's why I do projections at the beginning of the season and continue to update them throughout this month, non-PPR, half point and full, so you can see the differences about where guys land.
Man, there's so much information in the last 10 minutes. I feel like I'm ready for the draft right now. Matt, thanks so much. As always, hope we catch up with you soon, shortly. It's a fun time of year. I mean, everybody's got a championship team before the draft, and that's kind of like our own world of spring training. It's great right before the fantasy football draft. Thanks for all the intel.
You got it, guys. Good luck. Talk soon.
All right, Matt. Take care.
There he is, Matt Camp from Bleacher Report. And obviously you can go to Bleacher Report and find out and read all Matt Camp's stuff. But great having him on this show. I do need a little help. I've never been in a PPR league, so I am a little concerned that I may draft incorrectly this year.
Yeah,
you know, because that's a big deal.
You asked a good question.
It's a big deal. You know, I mean, it's going to change things quite a bit. Matt Camp joined us on the SDCCU fan hotline. SDCCU has low mortgage loan rates, equal housing opportunity. Apply now at SDCCU.com. All right, program rolls on here towards 7 o'clock. I got a little bad news to throw at you.
Oh, gosh. Do I need any more bad
news? It's not really bad, but Pete Alonso just hit a 3-run homer almost out of Atlanta Stadium. And I don't like him taking advantage while Fernando Tatis Jr. is going to have to sit on the 10-day IL.
That's not going to help.
No.
That
old
IL
rookie
thing.
Of the year race, yeah. That's going to really hurt Fernando. And you'd kind of hope that Alonso would go into a big slump. He just hit one, like, from Atlanta to Athens. I mean, unbelievable bomb that Alonzo just hit. All right, we'll take a break. Come back, Big Five.
Yes, Scrappy, sir.
You ready?
Yes, sir.
We're all ready. Gwen and Chris.
4:36. Man, you just missed a doozy. If you are into fantasy football, the jewels that Matt Camp just gave us, Bleacher Report, woo, you missed out. I know my team is going to be better just from that segment.
The more that I listen to Matt Camps and the more I read and the more I research, which I have to do this year because I didn't make the playoffs last year, the more it seems to me like what you should do is draft nothing but running backs and wide receivers for the first, like, 14 rounds. Then pick a quarterback, a defense, and a kicker and go home.
It wouldn't hurt.
I mean, that's what everybody's telling everybody to do because there's no big difference from one quarterback to the next, and there's no difference in the kicking, or the defenses are impossible to predict.
I think it boils down to when, because there's like the top-tier quarterbacks where there's like three or four of them that actually make a difference, but you're then if you do that, you're missing out on those wide receivers or running backs that there aren't as many of that get you good points.
Yeah, and you need so many guys because of the bye weeks and because of the injuries and because the way the, you know, football has changed dramatically, just like every other sport, but in the way that coaches use players now.
Yes.
It used to be the guy who was the running back was the
running
back.
They ran him into the ground.
He was the running back.
Yeah.
You know, so if you had Le'Veon Bell on your team and then he got every carry. Well, now if you have Le'Veon Bell on your team, he may not get every carry.
There's going to be two or three other guys. Gives him a little breather, for sure.
Yeah, so it's you really have to have a ton of guys. I was so frustrated watching last year because I felt like I had good players, but they never got the ball. So I got to find who's going to get the ball this year, and coaches won't tell you that. No. They never tell you.
They don't.
I know. So anyway, jerks.
All right. it's time for the Big Five, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay.
It's now time for the most unpredictable, most wacky, most opinionated segment of the show.
I wouldn't brag about it.
Gwen and Chris talk about the best of the rest.
Great balls of fire.
Ooh, with a twist.
Personally, I think we got hosed on that call.
The Big Five begins right now.
Don't panic, but there's absolutely nothing to worry about.
On 97.3 The Fan.
And Scraber doesn't know how to use his mic again.
That is not true because it's on his second day in a row.
That is not true.
Did you see him try to put that up slyly like it was not?
Nope. I didn't see that.
Didn't see anything.
I just saw you start talking with no mic on. That's all I saw.
I did everything right. If you have any big five,
what's going on with my mouth right now?
If you have any big five topics, find me on Twitter at Matt Scraby. Let's get into it, Thomas.
Number five.
The Miami Marlins are headed towards a second straight last place finish in the NL East.
No.
CEO Derek Jeter isn't ready to disclose whether manager Don Mattingly will return next season. Jeter said, quote, "There hasn't been a decision yet, to be honest with you. We've been so focused on the trade deadline and see what we could do with it. They're just not sure what's going to happen. At the end of every year, we sit down and evaluate all members of the organization, whether it's the manager, coaches, player development, scouting, front office," end quote. So Mattingly is in the final year of his four-year contract, and many people think his time may be up because the former Dodgers manager was hired by ex-owner Jeffrey Loria prior to the 2016 season. So, Tony, do you think Don Mattingly should be fired? And I know that's a tough question for you because you played for him.
No. I don't think he should be fired. They literally gutted the entire team that they did have. And granted, they had some pretty tough circumstances, man. You lose a pitcher like Jose Fernandez and, you know, the tragedy they had losing him. It really turned that organization because they were actually on their way building up in that division. They were a team that a lot of National League East teams were worried about. And they just haven't been able to recover since the passing of Jose Fernandez. So, and then you add that to a new ownership taking over and wanting to go a completely different direction. We talked about this. The rebuild has started for them. And I don't know, by bringing in a new manager, is that going to speed anything up at this point? Plus, you know who was Derek Jeter's vet when he came up to the Yankees?
Don Mattingly.
Oh.
So they're still, and from what I know, they're pretty tight. So maybe that buys them a little bit more time. I don't think firing Don does anything for this franchise at this point. And I may be biased.
No, you made good points. Chris, what do you think?
I don't think you're biased at all. I mean, I think the Marlins would be just taking a big step backwards if they fired Don Mattingly. I mean, he's already put all this effort and time into these young players. They've gotten used to playing for him. I don't know that anybody else can come in there and do a whole lot better with the talent that they have. As the talent gets better, guess what? Don Mattingly will start winning more games. That's usually how it works. I think Mattingly is a good manager. So I think – now, that doesn't mean that Derek Jeter won't fire him because –
it sure doesn't.
Because the Marlins haven't done a whole lot of things right since Derek Jeter has been in charge. And I still got to wait to see if Derek Jeter's ever going to figure it out. Look, he's a Hall of Fame ball player, but Michael Jordan was a Hall of Fame basketball player. He still hasn't figured out how to own an NBA team.
Nah,
he really hasn't. I mean, and he's had how many years? Like 15 years, 12 years with Charlotte and all those teams that Jordan's been a part of, and they've been horrible every single year.
You know, the one thing that we can say about it, about Michael, is that he's been a major factor in the collective bargaining agreement. At least he's done that part right.
Right. That part he's fine, but he can't put together a winning team.
Which is really why he owns the team.
Exactly.
Put together a winning team.
So I don't know what Jeter's going to do, but I wouldn't fire Mattingly.
Number four.
The NFL and Jay-Z's entertainment and sports representation company are teaming up for events and social activism. The league not only will use Jay-Z's Roc Nation to consult on its entertainment, including the Super Bowl halftime show, but will work with the rapper and entrepreneur's company to strengthen community through music and the NFL's Inspire Change initiative. NFL owners agreed to contribute up to $89 million over 6 years toward causes players were supporting, and Commissioner Roger Goodell sees the partnership with Roc Nation as a significant step in several directions.
And also, many people think Jay-Z is hypocritical for being vocally against the NFL in the last couple years and then joining up with them. So, Chris, do you think this is hypocritical of Jay-Z?
I think this is necessary for Jay-Z.
Oh.
Because he just doesn't have enough money already.
He's a billionaire.
The fact that the NFL owners are going to give him and his company, what, $89 million, what, a piece?
No, I think they're
to
all
help them put together a couple of
over
musical
6 years. And the NFL's Inspire Change Initiative.
Okay. I don't really, I'd have to read up on everything, to be honest with you. Got to be careful what you say. If you're going to say that you hate the NFL and then jump into bed with the NFL, then people are going to think you're being a little hypocritical. But I don't really understand this move. So I guess I'm just kind of out in left field on this. It seems to me you ought to be able to sit together in a room and put together a Super Bowl halftime show without Jay-Z's input.
Well, it recently came out, too, that he didn't do the... People thought he didn't do the halftime show last year because he was mad about the Colin Kaepernick stuff, but it came out that he didn't like the interview process, and he wanted just to be the sole person selected for that halftime show.
I'm the wrong person to ask about Jay-Z because I don't know a lot about him other than that he's married to Beyonce.
It's pretty much all you need to know about him.
Okay, well, then that's all I do know. Why... Is he the only person on this planet that's capable of putting together an interesting musical act and show?
No.
I wouldn't think he is. So that's why I wonder why the NFL would commit so
much. He's a big name.
So
true. People will listen to him.
Okay.
What do you think, Tony? Do you think it's hypocritical of Jay-Z?
Yes. I think both things can be true, though, right? This one's difficult because Jay-Z, you know, tried to convince Travis Scott not to do the halftime show last year. And that was because he thought Travis Scott was going to be second fiddle to, was it Maroon 5 that was on there?
It was.
And that's what he didn't think should happen. He's been catching a lot of flack for this because he's been a big time supporter of Colin Kaepernick during the whole situation. But he made a very interesting point yesterday. He said, at some point, we have to advance from kneeling, which the whole point of the kneeling was to bring attention to the things that Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reid were bringing to. And the objective is to get the attention, right?
Yeah.
Now what? And right. I think that that's where Jay-Z at least is speaking as though he's trying to... make changes at, right?
Bridge the gap?
He's trying to... There's got to be a next step after the protest. And I think that's where Jay-Z comes in. Clearly, the NFL is taking a hit, especially in the urban community, right? With all of the stuff that's gone on. And so from the NFL standpoint, it's kind of it's beneficial to them from that standpoint, right?
So the NFL figures if they work with Jay-Z, they'll get the urban community back.
That's what I think.
Okay. Colin Kaepernick actually tweeted out yesterday. He said, "Today marks the 3-year anniversary of the first time I protested systemic oppression. I continue to work and stand with people in our fight for liberation. Despite those who are trying to erase the movement has always lived with the people." And people are saying that that was directed at Jay-Z.
Could have been. I think, again, it's important to remember Colin Kaepernick didn't kneel for himself. He knelt for
people.
Yeah, it hasn't helped Colin Kaepernick's career out any.
Definitely not.
And I think that's where people are having a hard time swallowing. It's like they clearly have blackballed Colin Kaepernick out the league. And I think it's hard for people to swallow the fact that you are now teaming up with the people. It's almost like kind of brushing Colin Kaepernick to the side, even though it was kind of unlike. We said this when it happened, that it wasn't likely that they were going to open that door back up for him. Not to mention, he got a settlement from him, too.
He did.
So it's one of those tough ones that maybe we don't all see right now, but years down the line, we'll recognize it as, okay, that's what he was trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
Would the Super Bowl cease to be a big event if we just sent the University of Texas marching band out there at halftime and they played a few tunes and started the game like 10 minutes later? Or do we have to have a 7-hour halftime show in order for the Super Bowl to be as big event as it is?
Clearly, in the NFL's mind, that halftime show is a big deal because they've redone it and had these committees
oh my goodness.
seems like the last like 10 years. They hit one, they miss one. They hit one, they miss three. They hit one, they miss five. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah,
they're trying to figure that part out. I think this is, I think the halftime part is just a piece of what this whole situation is about.
I bet you most of the people listening to our show are obviously your sports fans. You've been listening to sports talk radio, but you're probably like me. Halftime of the Super Bowl, I spend some quality time with Kylie.
No, I spend some
we
quality
go on a
time
long
with...
walk, and then we come back, and we don't miss any of the game.
A lot of times I end up spending quality times looking at the back of my eyelids.
Take about a 45-minute nap.
Take a little nap, come up. Oh, game started.
Yeah.
I'm usually number three. I usually have eaten so much food at that point, I have no choice but to take a nap.
CBS Sports' Dennis Dodd was on the morning show with Ben Woods talking college football, and they were talking about how it seems like the championship will be Alabama-Clemson every single year. And they were asking, is that bad for college football? Well, Dennis Dodd, I was going to play this clip. I don't think we have enough time. But what do you guys think? Do you think Alabama-Clemson championship again this year is bad for college football? Tony?
I don't know if it's bad for college football, but it would be boring to see. I mean, I have already seen that matchup, and yes, I would feel differently if the game turned out to be just like a fantastic game, but I wouldn't be excited going into the game. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like, it'd
yeah,
be like,
yeah.
Man, we've seen this like 2 years in a row, 3 years in a row. I don't need to see it again. But if the game was good, I'm all for it, but I wouldn't be excited going in for sure.
Chris, what do you think? Is Alabama-Clemson a championship game again this year bad for college football?
Alabama, anybody is bad for college football.
Well, we all know that you are the biggest fan of Nick Saban.
Big fan.
Big fan. If they're the best two teams, I guess they should keep playing for the championship. It doesn't matter. You know, I'd like to see some fresh blood, obviously. But, however, if San Diego State got in the championship game and they were playing in it for like the 18th year in a row, I wouldn't be complaining.
You sure would.
So,
I know I would.
You know, I can understand. I mean, these teams... I mean, if you don't like it out there, somebody beat them.
Please.
You know, just please beat these teams. I mean, they do play 13 games a season. Knock them off.
Good stuff.
Number two.
We're going tennis here because Nick Kyrgios.
He's at it again, huh?
Yes, he's at it again. We've talked to him about him in the Big Five and how he has a lot of outbursts on the tennis court. He was fined $113,000 by the ATP after his second-round match at the Western and Southern Open. The tour announced the penalties today, a day after Kyrgios insulted the chair umpire Fergus Murphy. That's a great name, Fergus Murphy.
Good old Fergus.
Good old Fergus. And left the court to smash two rackets during a loss to Karen Khachanov. Khachanov.
That boy.
The ATP listed a breakdown.
I think we should talk tennis every day just to hear you try to pronounce names.
Khachanov. And, you know, I tried to remember how to pronounce those, but anyway. The ATP listed a breakdown of eight fines ranging from $3,000 to $20,000 each for violations like unsportsmanlike conduct. Here's a little bit of what happened during the match.
Teamwork, bruh! In the game. Teamwork. Hands down. Every single time I play, he's doing some stupid every time.
Code violation on sportsmanlike conduct.
Wait, are they at a club playing tennis?
I don't know what's going
the
on there.
Beat in the background. Yeah, there's some techno going on.
That was
in there.
Really interesting. But so people are kind of angry at Kyrgios because he's crazy. Chris, is it time for him to be suspended from the pro tour?
Suspended? Kick him off the tour.
That was Happy Gilmore.
I know. You know what? There's been bad boys in tennis forever. Elina Stasi back in the 70s. I mean, you could YouTube some of his antics, and they would put Kyrgios to shame.
Really?
Yeah. John McEnroe, obviously.
Yeah, we know John.
We know about John.
John had a little temper.
He had a bit of a temper. So, I mean, this has been part of tennis. There's always Jimmy Connors was no choir boy either. So,
a lot of people think of him as a choir boy, though, for some reason.
Yeah, he was.
Was he a little calmer when he was older?
Well, when he got into like his mid-30s, then he became everybody's go-to
like
guy because it was like he's the old guy trying to beat the young kids.
Okay.
But when he was in his prime, nobody liked Jimmy Connors.
Really?
No. So, yes, Kyrgios probably should be suspended because, I mean, enough is enough and he needs to get the message, but I don't know that he ever will get the message. He's obviously got a temper that he can't control, and so that's what you get with a player like that. But I don't think it's not that. We just have more media scrutiny now than we had back in the day when Nastasi. I mean, Eli Nastasi's nickname was Nasty. It was a good nickname. It was well-deserved.
Tony, do you think he should be kicked off the tour?
No, I thought
at least suspended. Yeah, suspended.
No, Scraby, I don't think he should be kicked off the tour or suspended. As Chris said, this isn't the first go-around for tennis. They have bad boys. And they have some pretty verbally abusive players throughout the course of tennis.
Serena Williams has lost her mind a few times.
And listen, I'm okay with that, honestly, because in a heat of competition, and you want to, if you really want to win bad, that is a product of it sometimes. Now, maybe my man goes a little bit overboard sometimes.
A lot of overboard.
But that's kind of, you can't turn that off and expect him to be, even be competitive out there.
I mean, we've already talked about it. Wouldn't baseball be more exciting if they let managers argue with umpires again?
Yep.
That's true.
Everybody's too cool for school now to argue.
Radio.com insider Joe Girardi was on the John Quintero show earlier today. And, of course, Fernando Tatis was a topic of conversation. And former Yankee manager Joe Girardi is sold on Tatis. Here is what he told Coach earlier.
Just amazed at how good of a player he is at such a young age. And it's just not on one side of the baseball. I think the sky is the limit for this kid. If this kid stays healthy, and I know this is a really big prediction, but would any of us be surprised if he's a perennial all-star and possibly a Hall of Famer when it's all said and done?
We're talking Hall of Fame with Joe Girardi, former Yankees manager. So, Tony, do you think it's too early to talk Hall of Fame for Fernando Tatis Jr.?
Of course it is. Of course, it's way too early to talk Hall of Fame.
But has he done enough to think about it?
Well, listen, the fact of the matter is when you do comparisons of other people who've been through this league that have the same amount of bats and have done the same thing in their rookie year, they're pretty much all Hall of Famers. I mean, you compare shortstops, his numbers are better than Jeter, Rodriguez. Who was the third shortstop? There's another one in there. I can't remember. We did it on Fox Sports San Diego the other day. The comparisons are that high.
Ripken, the
WAR that he has, I think it's like compared to like Babe Ruth.
Wow.
So it's too early to be talking Hall of Fame, but the reason why it's being talked about is because of the comparisons that of what he's done in his rookie season.
Chris, it's far too much hype. Far too much hype. Let the guy just relax and play ball for a few years.
Side note.
And then we'll get to the rest of it.
Yeah, side note. Do you think he's got too much pressure being put on him?
I don't. Does he look like it?
No.
Okay, well, then there's your answer.
Okay, all right, good.
Good point.
That's it.
Oh, thanks, that's guys. The Big Five?
That's it.
All right.
That was pretty good.
You survived another edition of the Big Five on 97.3 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.